Coming up on Golf Today, just when he thought he was out, is Rory McIlroy really about to return to PGA Tour boardroom life? A report says yes, and we'll dive in. Rex and Lav stop by for our Golf Today roundtable on Scotty and Nelly taking no prisoners and taking over the sport. Is this good for the game? And another major champ is putting on a hosting hat. Stuart Sink is our guest. He has plenty of game and always plenty to say on Golf Today.
Golf Today.
Hello and welcome. Golf Today on a Tuesday. Damon Hack alongside Eamon Lynch, Golf Week Magazine. It's another newsy day. That's what we like.
In a newsy week, we have Rory McIlroy teeing it up in team competition for the first time down in New Orleans. And as usual, he's making some noise outside the ropes as well.
No doubt. Here's what you need to know on this Tuesday. As you know, the big story in the world of golf continues to be the world number one Nelly Korda. She won the Chevron Championship on Sunday for her second major title. She's now won five straight starts on the LPGA Tour and was scheduled to tee it up this week at the JM Eagle LA Championship, but issued the following statement on social media Monday, part of which read, "I want to let you all know that after a lot of consideration with my team, I have decided to withdraw from the JM Eagle LA Championship presented by PlasPro. It was not an easy decision. After the unbelievable week at the Chevron and grinding through the mental and physical challenges of four events in the past 5 weeks, I am definitely feeling exhausted. With so much still to come throughout 2024, I feel I need to listen to my body, get some rest, so I can be ready for the remainder of the season."
Meanwhile, the PGA Tour is heading to TPC Louisiana for the Zurich Classic of New Orleans, the only official team event of the season. Two-man tandems competing in foursomes and four-ball. Rory McIlroy is one of the headliners. He'll tee it up with Shane Lowry. Nicolai and Rasmus Højgaard are in the field too, a couple of identical twins, so we can expect the confused announcers to play it safe by simply saying Højgaard for birdie.
Yeah, probably a good move. Speaking of Rory, according to a report in The Guardian, the world number two may be getting back into PGA Tour politics, could be rejoining the PGA Tour policy board as a player director, and is also slated to take up a position on the board of directors of PGA Tour Enterprises, which was launched earlier this year. Both are subject to a vote on Wednesday for The Guardian's report. Webb Simpson will be resigning from his post as a PGA Tour policy board player director and has requested for Rory to rejoin the group. Reminder, Rory resigned as a player director 5 months ago. Let's continue the conversation with a Golf Today roundtable and welcome in Golf Channel senior writers Rex Hoggard and Ryan Lavner. Great to see you guys. Rex, I wouldn't have bet on this 5 months ago. The surprise that Rory is coming back, but what a boon for the PGA Tour, considering he's a global player, member of the PGA Tour, member of the DP World Tour, has met Yasser Al-Rumi and the governor of the PIF, and views the game globally. Is this a win for the PGA Tour in its negotiations with the PIF?
Oh, I think his voice is very important in that room. I remember when he ran for the chairman of the PAC a few years ago just to go on to the board, and I remember having an extended conversation with him about this, and the idea was is he looks at things a different way. Keep in mind, he was the first European player to be elected to the PGA Tour Policy Board. It was an important first step, and we all know how outspoken he has been throughout this entire process, both against the Public Investment Fund and LIV Golf. He has since June 6th kind of changed his stance on that. I do find it curious, and there will be pushback if this report does come to pass, because when he stepped down last year, he was replaced on the board by Jordan Spieth, who rotates off the board and will be replaced by Camila Vijaykas, who was voted in February by the entire tour membership. And I think that's important to point out. We need to know exactly where this vote is going to happen. If it's just going to be policy board and board of directors for enterprises, I think you'll start hearing some players complain a little bit, because even though Rory is good in the boardroom, he's a voice that I think they need in that room. I think among the membership, he is still very polarizing.
And Lav, it's also, I've looked into some of these regulations, and because it is Webb Simpson stepping down with a request that he be replaced by somebody else, it actually becomes a full vote of the board rather than just the player directors, which it would be if Webb Simpson simply said, you know what, I want out of this. I'm curious if you think this makes any difference. Ryan, is there a tangible difference? Because it's not as though Rory coming onto the board suddenly just gets over all of the hurdles that exist towards any deal with the PIF at this point, because it's not just a matter of the dynamics on the PGA Tour's board, although it will be interesting to watch the dynamic between him and Patrick Cantlay, with whom he says he has a very average relationship. Do you think it actually does move a deal closer into the view, or is it just theatre to get there?
I certainly don't think that it hurts. And the good thing about adding Rory McIlroy to the PGA Tour policy board is that we know exactly what his viewpoints are. He's been forecasting them, or he's been discussing them for months, whether it's this deal with the PIF, this aspirational circuit for only the best players, a global circuit involving the top 60, 70, 80 players, whatever it ends up shaking out being. I think it can only help that Rory has not just built-in relationships with the Fenway Sports Group and the Strategic Sports Group, which align with the PGA Tour for PGA Tour Enterprises, but also that built-in relationship with the PIF governor, Yasir Al-Rumayyan, meeting with him, sharing his vision for what the game of golf could and should look like, even vouching for him last month at the Players' Championship and saying that some of the folks with LIV have kind of done Yasir a disservice with how the relationship has gone that way. I do think the relationship has been obviously mended over these past 10 months. He talked about, Rory did, about kind of being a sacrificial lamb following the June 6th announcement. With the changes now to the PGA Tour governance structure, he can at least now be part of the solution as opposed to being left out like he would have been ordinarily.
And Rory also part of TGL, which is a team component as well on the PGA Tour for 2025. Now, Rex, if you're a Rory McIlroy fan and you're seeing him go back and potentially take this step, as is the report, are you concerned about the effect that it might have on him inside the ropes as he tries to restart his major championship victory clock, for example?
I don't think this is going to have any impact on him from a competitive standpoint. He talked about it at the time last November when he stepped down. He likes to be busy. He just said at the time he wants to be busy with the things that are important to him. And at that time, being on the policy board was not, clearly, according to this report. That has changed. But we've seen him play really good golf while he's been on the policy board, and we've seen him play really bad golf while he's been on the policy board. So I don't think this is going to impact him one way or the other, beyond the idea that he's just been inconsistent so far this season as he gets further and further into the major championship season.
Ryan, let's move inside the ropes for a change here. Nelly and Scotty have a lot in common these days. They're playing pretty sublime golf. They're both dominant world number ones, but neither one of them gives you the impression that they really want to embrace the marketing side of golf, that they do their talking with their clubs rather than in any other kind of public forum. Do you think that position's going to have to change for both of them over time? Because they really have become the faces of their respective sport. And there's probably a little more pressure on Nelly to do that than there is Scotty, because simply the LPGA Tour doesn't have the apparatus to promote itself in the way that the men's game does.
Yeah, I think when it comes to Nelly, it feels a lot like we're kind of projecting our hopes and desires on Nelly Korda. We so desperately want her to have this Caitlin Clark moment for women's golf, to kind of cut the earnings gap or to create this movement in women's golf that isn't just a moment in time, but is sustainable for the next 5, 10, 15 years, whatever it's going to be. And so it's very interesting, but it only works, this movement, if Nelly Korda is embracing it, if she is genuinely passionate about growing the game, growing the sport, growing her platform on the LPGA. So you have the expectations for her play, which are one thing, but I think expectations for her to become an ambassador for the sport are an entirely different set of circumstances. And it's not really her burden. It's the LPGA's burden to have a platform for her in which she can showcase her excellence. I do think that this leadership role will kind of come more naturally to her as she continues to mature, as she continues to get more comfortable in the spotlight. But I think it'll really begin to suit her as long as she continues to win. That's the most important thing she can do now. And I think Nelly Korda is doing the right thing this week by sitting out, refreshing, refocusing, and teeing it up again in New Jersey, because this can only last as long as she is a dominant superstar on the LPGA.
Rex, I want your thoughts on Scottie Scheffler. We both talked to him quite a bit over the last few months as he's dominated the sport. I see a player and a person who's evolving in his answers when he addresses the media, when he's in a press conference situation or one-on-one after a round, that he's giving a little more, that he's evolving as someone who has to be asked questions time and time again. Are you sensing the same, or are you still seeing that he's a bit reserved?
No, I think he's coming out of the shell maybe a little bit, becoming a little bit more familiar or a little bit more comfortable in the spotlight. We have seen him involved. We were talking about this on the podcast just the other day, the idea that go back to the Players' Championship when he was kind of getting peppered with some questions about the LIV players, and he was really quick to push back on the idea that why are you asking me? You should ask the LIV players. They decided to leave the PGA Tour. So I think there are parts of him getting comfortable in that spotlight. He is clearly not going to become an outspoken player like Rory McIlroy has. He simply does not have that in his DNA. But I think there is something to be said for him becoming more comfortable in the player that he is, being more comfortable in the idea that he is a dominant player, and that those of us in the media, we're going to continue to start asking him these questions more and more often. We saw it with Tiger Woods. We saw it with a lot of players who moved into that category, and he's starting to come to grips with that.
Rex, I want to go back to Sunday at the Chevron for a moment. Nelly Korda said it was the longest back nine of her life, and I don't think she was speaking metaphorically. It was a six-hour round. That's not uncommon anywhere in professional golf, certainly not uncommon on the LPGA Tour. Do you think the game and the LPGA Tour specifically does enough? Since we're moving into this era where the tour seem to be focusing more on the fan experience and the product as entertainment, does more need to be done on this idea of telling players to pick up the pace a little bit?
I love the idea that if everything we've talked about on this roundtable, we get back to a good old-fashioned pace of play debate going on between the four of us. I will say this, that if you go back over the last 20 to 30 years, we've had this conversation so many times. It's not an LPGA problem. It's not a PGA Tour problem. It's a golf problem, that the game is just very slow at the highest levels. And we can sit here and give you 10 reasons why that is. It's golf course setup. It's the way players are taught to never rush a shot. Certainly in college, that's part of the equation that they need to look at. There was, if you need a paradigm of hope in this conversation, though, last week, that Theo Epstein, the former managing manager of the Boston Red Sox, who has been working with the MLB the last few years, spoke with the 16 players on the Player Advisory Council and kind of talked about what SSG thinks the product should look like going forward. And one of those things was pace of play. And if you go back to last year in baseball, they actually shaved 24 minutes off the average game. A couple of different rules did it. It was a pitch clock. There was a lot of other things that went into play. 24 minutes is an eternity. If you can imagine doing that to a PGA Tour round. I remember when this came up a few years ago and PGA Tour officials said they would be lucky if they could shave 3 to 4 minutes off the round of golf. Now, think about that. If they can come up with some sort of solution that you can reduce a round on the PGA Tour or the LPGA by 24 minutes, that's certainly going to improve the fan experience.
We're in a microwave oven society, but Rex and Lav are timeless like an old pair of leather shoes. Gentlemen, thanks for joining us on this Tuesday.
Thanks, boy.
Well, Stuart Sink has officially reached a milestone age. He's old enough to be a host on the Champions Tour. Happening this week in Georgia, the former Open champion is here to talk about that and a few other topics coming up right after the break. Continuing on golf today, the PGA Tour Champions is in Duluth, Georgia for this week's Mitsubishi Electric Classic, TPC Sugarloaf. Stephen Ames trying to win the event for the third time after victories in 2017 and 2023. Coverage begins Friday, 12 p.m. Eastern Time on Golf Channel.
And how about this? 2009 Open champ and 8-time PGA Tour winner Stuart Sink will play tournament host this week. He joined the PGA Tour in 1997 after graduating from Georgia Tech. Been a longtime resident of Gwinnett County and currently lives in Duluth, Georgia. Sink Charities, along with the Special Needs Schools of Gwinnett, will serve as the tournament's official charitable partners for this year. Great to have Stuart with us. You went to Georgia Tech. You live in the area. You're playing. You're hosting. What are you most looking forward to this week?
Well, like every week, it really is just about the competing and the competition. That's the part of not being a host is still look forward to the most. I just love playing and competing and having a chance to get in the mix. And aside from that this week, I think – to be honest, when we had the PGA Tour event here back in between 97 and 08, I played in it every year. I lived in the neighborhood every year. And I didn't have the best attitude about the tournament back in those days. I just I saw it as a little bit of like a all the extracurricular activities I was doing was a little bit of a burden, I felt like, at the time. And I was totally wrong about that, and I regret it. So I'm using this, hopefully, this new hosting situation as a way to sort of have a second chance, a mulligan on that. And so I've had a lot better attitude, and I'm in a different place in my life and my career. So it's just a lot of fun and an honor to be able to do it.
You're still competing quite a lot, though, Stuart. You've made a half dozen starts on the PGA Tour this year. This will be your third on the PGA Tour Champions. Is that a kind of time split that you see yourself continuing for the foreseeable future?
I haven't really thought too much about that specifically, but the way it's worked out so far this year, I would see it continuing, yes. I'm, as of now, not in the signature events, and I'm only in the Open Championship as far as being exempt. So there's a lot of tournaments that I would love to play in that I'm just not getting access to. And for me, and I'm in a good spot that there's a lot of PGA Tour Champions events that are opposite those. And so I'll have an opportunity to play a little bit of both tours. And hopefully I would love to claw my way back into those signature events like any golfer would. But in the case that that doesn't happen, I'll have a lot of starts on PGA Tour Champions as well.
Very few golfers are happy with their game. Maybe Scotty and Nelly. You know, you played well at Sony. Syed, Valspar, Valero, what's the state of Stuart Sink's game, age 50?
Age almost 51. I'll be 51 in a few weeks. But no, I appreciate you noticing. I've had some good flashes this year, and I've made some pretty significant changes. So the constant sort of tug of war between feeling comfortable and being like in all out go mode and making changes is ever present. And it shows up most when you get into a situation where you have some nervousness or some stress. And as you know, golf puts you in those positions all the time. So it's a great opportunity for me to be learning and trying, testing myself out, trying new things and making some changes that I feel like are necessary. But at times I've played well and gotten myself into sort of the upper stratosphere of leaderboards on both tours. And I haven't really put it all together yet, but I'm hoping that as I kind of keep going and keep settling into the changes I'm making and the work I'm doing, the progress, that I'll be able to continue to like hit the finish line strong and pick up some really good finishes here the rest of this year.
You mentioned you're almost 51, Stuart. We just saw a 15-year-old make a cut on the Corn Ferry Tour last weekend. Miles Russell wasn't even a year old when you won the Open at Turnberry. Does it make you feel old when you hear these kids creeping up on you, or do you still feel healthy enough that you can hold your own for a while yet?
I still feel plenty healthy that I can hold my own. I am also, at the same time, very impressed by a young kid coming out there and not just making the cut, but he had a great week. I mean, he played some clutch golf, and he turned everyone's heads, and he definitely made his name a name that will be around on the golf landscape for a long time. I hope so anyway. So, but golf is one of those games too, a sport where it takes a little bit more than just the ability to hit the shots, that you need to learn a lot about yourself over the years and to learn a lot about the way the golf ball reacts under certain conditions and how you react under certain conditions. And the only way to do that is to just test yourself time and time and time again. And Miles, I don't know Miles, but I know that he is an exceptional talent, and he's got the foundation to be able to move on and do amazing things in this game. But time will help him refine those abilities.
Speaking of time, I want to talk about time commitment. Reports are Rory going to go back to the PGA Tour boardroom life. You've been on the PGA Tour board. Our late, great colleague Tim Rosefort once wrote in Golf Digest, it takes a certain type of player to want to sit in a boardroom for 6 to 8 hours and listen to disgruntled players. What kind of time commitment was it like for you, and will it be like for Rory in these unsettled times?
I think the time commitment now is a lot greater than it was then. Going back to my board time, our biggest issue was we were moving from a money list-based performance ranking to the FedEx Cup, and we were beginning the playoffs and the point structures and all that stuff. So while it was a big item on our plate, it really didn't compare much to what the guys on the board have been going through for the last couple years with LIV Golf and all the different, you know, I don't even know how to describe it. It's a conversation on its own, but I think that's a bigger time commitment now, and everybody seems to have a thought. And yes, there are disgruntled players too, but for a good reason. I mean, all the players want the best for the tour, for themselves. They want their play to be the best it can be, and they want the environment out on the PGA Tour to be the best. and they want the best relationship with the sponsors. So it's very complex, and it takes a lot of time. And I personally, for one, am in huge debt of gratitude for the guys that have served on the board these last couple of years.
Stuart, there's so much uncertainty around the tour these days, and regardless of whether or not there is a deal with the Public Investment Fund of Saudi Arabia, there is now a private equity ownership stake in the tour. Is there any trepidation among your colleagues on the Champions Tour about what changes might be coming down the road and if it would have any impact, positive or negative, on the Champions Tour?
I haven't really been privy to much conversation about that. I really don't know that there's a lot of concern about the safety of the future going forward with the PGA Tour Champions. I think it's a really good product out here. And I know that we operate completely within the PGA Tour's portfolio, so to speak. So I love the way I've seen it now firsthand. I've played in, I don't know, six or so starts out here on PGA Tour Champions. And I've seen that the interaction between the players and the pro-am groups and the sponsors and the fans has just like really opened my eyes to the way it ought to be and the way it used to be in a way out on the PGA Tour. And so I think that's a really valuable asset that PGA Tour Champions has, that it's a much more personal interaction. And it's a, I'm not going to paint it in a light that it's not. It's a smaller situation out here than the PGA Tour has become. There's no question about that. But for a player my age and older, 50 and older, it's a really great way to sort of extend your career at the end of your competitive days on the PGA Tour. It feels the same when you get in contention out here as it does anywhere else. And that's what we all love and we all hope for at the beginning of every week. But along the way, we're going to the pro-am draw parties. We're having dinner with each other and getting to know sponsors and tournament officials by first name. And that's just something that is kind of a missing piece on the PGA Tour over the years that I've noticed.
Tomorrow's a big day in terms of the new makeup of the PGA Tour. Jay Monahan's going to inform all of the players what the dollar value is right now of the equity grants that are being given in PGA Tour Enterprises, the new for-profit face of the tour. You're probably going to be one of those guys, since you've had quite a stout record over the last 5 years, including a couple of wins. Is that of interest to you, or is it a talking point among tour players right now in terms of what this is and what might be expected of players as they begin to sell the product over the following few years?
Interesting question, and because it's not been a talking point among players. And I am very surprised about that, because I also, to address the first part of your question, yes, it's of very high interest to me. And I'm sure I speak for every player when I say it, they're all interested. And I'm sure they've probably all gone and done their own little calculations, just like I have, and tried to figure out where the heck am I going to fall on this thing. It's but it's something that players haven't really talked to each other about, at least not in my groups. Now, it could be that players, like with their closest pals, are talking to each other, but it's kind of been a private thing. I think it's out here, the culture of players is that you don't really talk much about finances. I mean, there's, you know, you don't talk that much about, oh, I finished third last week and made X amount of dollars. You know, it's just not really a topic, especially since we are more geared towards points now in the way we're compared to our peers than back in my early days when it was all money list. So it's not been that big of a topic. I know it's an important topic, but players just aren't discussing it out here that much among themselves. I think that's more of a conversation they're having with their financial teams and their families at home, maybe, than their peers out here.
Well, sitting out there on that veranda, it must feel like life full circle for you. You're hosting, you're a major champ, Georgia Tech Yellow Jacket, wife Lisa with you this week as host. What are you most looking forward to?
I think it's reconnecting with the fan base that I have. And I mean, it's a gray area between who's a fan and who's a friend. I've got a lot of friends in this neighborhood. We lived here for over 20 years in the neighborhood right here at TPC Sugarloaf. So this is still, even though we don't live here in this neighborhood anymore, it's still like my sort of de facto home base in Atlanta, that I still have the most ties in this Gwinnett County. It's like a million person suburban county in Atlanta. This is where my de facto home is. So I see a lot of familiar faces. I know I've got tremendous support out there, and I haven't played an event here since 2008. So it's been quite a long time, and I get to rekindle some of the relationship I have with the people out here. And some are friends, some are fans, some are both, but it's going to be a good time.
Looks like a bluebird day, Stuart. Enjoy. Always appreciate your time. We'll speak to you soon.
Okay, guys. Thanks for having me, as always.
Host and major champ Stuart Sink, Golf Today, is back after this.
Golf Central Update, brought to you by Callaway Golf.
Back on Golf Today, last year's Zurich Classic, Nick Hardy and Davis Riley birdied four of their final six, highlighted by Riley's 33-foot birdie putt from the fringe on 17 to give both players their first PGA Tour win. Earlier today, our Steve Burkowski caught up with the defending duo.
Alongside the team that was victorious here a year ago, Nick, when you return to New Orleans, what are the memories from what you and Davis were able to accomplish 12 months ago?
Yeah, very real. Doesn't feel long ago coming back here now. Course is in great shape this week, and just a lot of good feelings, a lot of good vibes. Love this format, love this tournament. Great volunteers, great sponsor, great people. I love it here.
Davis, why did you guys work so well together last year?
Yeah, I think our games are fairly similar. You know, we do a lot of things similar, and yeah, obviously being good friends, we can kind of feed off of each other. But yeah, our games, we're fairly long hitters, good ball strikers, and then we're just trying to look to get the putter going. So yeah, I think our games are very similar, play similar ball and everything, so it was a pretty easy week.
How do you prepare for a format like this that sees multiple formats throughout the week?
Yeah, I mean, I think we prepare individually. That's just what we're used to. But when it comes down to the team part of it, I think you just kind of mesh with a good vibe, good attitude, and just kind of create good momentum. I think that's really a big key in this format. Just once you get the momentum going as a team, you just kind of keep feeding off each other, and it kind of makes it feel easy.
Winning on the PGA Tour is the ultimate goal for all you guys. How did the victory last year maybe open up your mind to bigger and better things?
For sure, kind of, getting that monkey off the back, getting that first win is huge. And, looking to get that first one, the second one. But, yeah, it's nice. It's nice coming to a place, obviously, where you drive in and you see your face on the on all the billboards and stuff. So, I think we're both looking for that second one, and hopefully we can kind of crack one here soon.
What did you learn from last year that maybe you fine-tune in 2024 to take it to the next level?
Yeah, for me, I learned a lot coming down the stretch trying to win a golf tournament. I know it was alternate shot, so it's a lot different than a normal event, but you still get the same feeling, same vibes, and it's almost harder because your shot means more when it's alternate shot. And coming down the stretch like that, I learned a lot how to handle myself. It's just about putting us and individually me more in that spot more often.
Who has more pressure, you or your partner?
It's funny, I was talking to somebody about this the other day. It's kind of tough in the alternate shot format because you kind of feel like you're bearing the weight for two guys, but no, we keep it pretty simple. Yeah. And we kind of went with the motto last year of no sorries. So yeah, I think that's kind of easy. We just play our game, and if golf happens and we hit a bad shot, we just know it's golf, and we just kind of move on with it.
Guys, always good to catch up. Appreciate the time. All the best this week.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Steve.
Who plays golf with no sorries? It's always somebody else's fault. No Nelly this week in Los Angeles, but a strong field for a $3.75 million prize fund, one of the largest purses for a non-major women's golf tournament. Coverage of the JM Eagle LA Championship begins Thursday, 6:30 p.m. Eastern Time, right here on Golf Channel. And last year, Australia's Hannah Green made a 25-foot birdie putt on the final hole to join a three-way playoff. She went on to par the second extra hole to win the event for her first LPGA win since September of 2019. An emotional Green spoke with Karen Stupples after the victory.
I see all these emotions coming out from you. You look so cool, calm and collected. Where does this come from?
It's been a long few years. I know I played really well last year, but getting across the line has been really difficult. So I'm really proud of myself for hanging in there because I really didn't think that I'd be in it with how I was playing and making so many putts. So, yeah, I'm just obviously really happy, but the other emotion is coming out right now.
You got me going too. I mean, this is we see you always that cool and calm. And at what point today did you really start to believe you had this chance?
I knew you didn't need a low score today to win. I feel like this weekend played a lot different to the first couple of days. So my caddy just said, stay patient. You always try and do that, but it's harder said than done. So I'm just really proud of holding that putt in regulation on 18 and obviously the putt last couple holes.
I heard everybody around you, they're calling for a shoey. Will you be doing a shoey?
I mean, I guess I have to give the fans what they want, right? But I wish I had new shoes.
And Hannah Green joins us now from Wiltshire Country Club. Hannah, we saw the emotion last year. The first question is, was there a shoey to celebrate after it?
No, there wasn't. I think, yeah, I only have one pair of golf shoes at the time, which I'm kind of glad that I did. But the celebrations weren't too bad as we had a team event the week after.
You've had reason to celebrate recently. Just a month ago, you beat Céline Boudier, who won a major last year, to take down the HSBC Women's World Championship. Your confidence has got to be pretty high heading into your defence in LA.
Yeah, it's actually really nice to be back here in LA. Even though I didn't have a great result at Chevron, I actually didn't feel like I played too bad. I just kind of played my way out of the tournament the first five holes. So it's really nice to be back in LA and also having a win under my belt already this season.
You're in my hometown, Hannah. What hole are you on at Wilshire? What's going on this morning out there?
We are on the 17th, which is, I guess, technically the 18th at Wilshire Country Club. I've just, played a practice round. Course is working really nice. So I think it's going to be actually quite difficult. The greens are quite bouncy already for a Tuesday. So we'll see what the scores will be like.
On that note, call me crazy. We just did an aerial of Wilshire. I'm seeing a little bit of the Melbourne Sand Belt, some of the great golf courses where you are from. Am I crazy or is there something to Melbourne and the Sand Belt and what we're seeing at Wilshire?
A little bit. I think the fairways are actually a little bit longer than we've typically played them, but there's lots of undulations and lots of drop-offs to actually around the green. So you kind of have to be creative. You don't always have to hit the high shot. You can actually kind of run some shots up the green, but the greens are really quick compared to what we've just recently played in Houston. So I think you'll see a lot of get run by the hole, so trying to dial that in and get used to that watching is going to be something we need to get used to.
So much attention these days, Hannah, on women's golf and specifically on Nelly Korda with the streak that she's on right now. What does that do for other players, including players like you who've won on tour recently as well? Does it want to make you kind of step up and be the challenger to Nelly Korda?
Yeah, definitely. I think actually one of the caddies posted maybe after she won three events that the Tournament of Champions is only going to be the field of Nelly Korda. So it's obviously a great run that she's playing in. And I played with her in post-mortem, so when she won her second event, and I actually didn't feel like she played great. Sounds really silly, but I almost felt like she had her B game. So she must be on such a high. And obviously I understand why she probably withdrew this week, because she must be tired, because I'm sure it's exhausting everything that she's doing. And you know, she is the face of the LPGA right now and women's golf, so she's got a lot of weight on her shoulders, but it's really inspiring. And I think we kind of feel like we have a chance this week now that she's not playing.
Speaking of a weight on the shoulder, you've been open about the mental side of the game. How much do you work on that relative to your long game, your short game, maybe compared to 2016 when you turned professional?
I didn't really work with anyone when I first came out on tour. I just kind of did things by myself and, you know, relied on my swim coach and my family. But since then, I've worked with a couple of people. And I think it's just hard because sometimes you play really well and the result doesn't come, or vice versa. So it's just such a difficult sport to play, especially since we're changing venue every week. But it's really important. And I think even just switching off from golf is important. It is our life, but we do need to make sure that we are enjoying ourselves off the course. So it's very important. And I think that's why I play so well here in LA. I just have really great memories from on and off the course.
There's a lot of big events coming up this summer. Hannah, you come from a particularly proud Olympic sporting nation. How much has your mind turned to the possibility of representing your country in Paris this summer?
Yeah, as soon as I got the chance to represent Australia and Tokyo, I really wanted to make sure that I got myself into the team for Paris. Obviously, we still have around 100 days till the Olympics, and we still have a few more tournaments to actually qualify. So it is in the back of my mind, but, you know, anything can happen. There's so many Aussies on tour, which is great. And, you know, I want all of the Aussies to compete well every week. Even though I have had a win earlier in the year, I still don't want to get ahead of myself and assume that I'm going to be the second spot in the team. So hopefully I just continue to play well and consistent, and, you know, once that final qualifying date is in, Minji and I are in the team.
Hannah, great to spend a few minutes with you. Best luck in your title defense, and we'll speak to you down the road.
Thanks, guys.
All right, she's a major champ, Hannah Green, still to come on Golf Today. Seen some great moments over the last few weeks across the game of golf. We're nominating some of our standouts when Golf Today returns. We're back on Golf Today. Time to nominate our Cincoro greatest moments from the last few weeks across the world of golf. And Eamon, there are plenty to choose from.
There are a lot to choose from. The one that jumped out at me was a broken down old man who won the Masters and made the cut this year. Not the one everyone's thinking of. Jose Maria Olazabal. Oh. His 35th Masters, 58 years of age. And to me, it was a masterclass in grit, in professionalism, and guile, because not just the difficult scoring conditions that prevailed at Augusta National, but Camilo Villegas revealed this after the round. He played with Jose Maria on Sunday. And Jose Maria didn't mention it at all, but his back went out on his second shot into 13, and he still battled his way to the clubhouse. He ended up tied 45th. He tied Brooks Koepka, tied John Rahm. He beat three other recent winners on the PGA Tour who made the cut and a lot more who didn't make the cut. And to me, it was, you know, that great old Lee Trevino line, a touch of class, baby. That's what we saw out of Jose Maria Olazabal this week.
And as mentioned, wouldn't even known it had Camilo Villegas not mentioned it. I tell you what, I'm going the other side of the spectrum. My winner, Miles Russell.
There's a big age gap we're taking here.
15 years of age, the lefty, the youngest ever to make the cut on the Korn Ferry Tour. He also finished tied for 20th in the event. Playing this week on the Korn Ferry, gets an exemption, by the way, into the Butterfield Bermuda Championship on the PGA Tour later this year. 15 years, 5 months, hits it 280-plus off the tee. He's just getting started.
And it's amazing neither one of us have managed to get to Scotty or Nelly, because they have been just human highlight reels for the last few weeks as well. But it just shows that there's a depth of stories in this game. Of course, we had our staff pick as well. We asked the team here to weigh in. And you could say this one's the entertainment value, because Jordan Spieth is always on everybody's list when it comes to the most entertaining moments, at least.
Never disappoints. And I was there in San Antonio. This is the par 5 18th. Very difficult hole when the wind is up. Jordan actually parred the hole on Thursday and Friday. So this is Saturday. You can hear him. He likes to talk to his golf ball in good times and bad. He drives it left.
This is the point where you start to move into the firing line, Damon.
Yeah, I am. I'm like, why is he aiming toward the clubhouse and our interview spot? Oh, Jordan.
Perhaps he was a little upset with you.
I thought I'd get a little extra camera time here. I'm like coming down from my interview spot saying, what is Jordan doing? Well, it's not out of bounds over here. He's trying to play it left to find a clear shot to the green.
Right.
This is his third.
No, it's there, right?
This is some wonderful camera work.
There's our interview spot right there to the left of your screen. And that golf ball is on the roof in the gutter. He actually had a 50-footer for par, ended up making a double bogey.
But, you know, the thing about Jordan Spieth, it doesn't matter if he's shooting 63 or 83. It's going to be the most exciting, potentially the ugliest, beautiful round that you've ever seen played on tour.
So who should win, though? And Nelly's won 5 straight. Scotty's won back-to-back, 4 of his last 5.
Yeah, they cancel each other out, to my mind, with their excellence. I give the award to Jordan Spieth this time around.
I do, too. And Jordan has played from some very interesting spots throughout his career. You want to talk about Pebble Beach, which was actually dangerous. I held my breath watching him hit that shot. But also to the right of the fairway at Birkdale by the equipment trailer on the way to winning the Open Championship for his third major back in 2017.
You need a shot of tequila if you're hitting it where Jordan Spieth hits it somewhere else out there.
What are your thoughts on this day? You're able to speak to Stuart Sink, major champ, Hannah Green, major champ, and of course we had Rex and Lav in the round table with the news about Rory McIlroy potentially back to the boardroom life.
Yeah, and I think that for a lot of constituencies in golf, they'll be happy to see that in terms of media partners and sponsors and other players. It's definitely a fractious time to be wading in there, but you could also make the argument that Rory McIlroy was playing significantly better golf in the middle of that kind of sense of uncertainty last year.
I think it's a win for the tour, a win for you. We're back tomorrow at 3 p.m. Enjoy your Tuesday.